super excited about my guest today. He is a former model, and I watched you, still watch you forever, fashion reporting on multiple channels, Lawrence Zarian.
Hi, love.
Thanks for keeping it real with me, and I was so excited to find out that you had 14 and a half years sober.
Isn't that amazing what the journey is? Because I was looking on Instagram, we're both a part of the KTLA family, and when I saw you being so open about your sobriety, I thought, I just have to say hello. So one door opens and a life friendship begins.
And you wanted to be on the show.
Oh my gosh.
Which is awesome, because I feel like I put it out there in the universe, because I definitely need assistance. Because you know what? Not every celebrity wants to talk about their sobriety. I am learning that.
I scream it from the rooftops. I wouldn't be here if I wasn't sober. It is hands down the best gift of my life, because I have a life.
I feel that way too. So let's back up. I want to get your story. You are a twin.
I had my own room for 7 minutes. My mom didn't know she.
I know you're like, what?
My mom didn't know she was having twins. She found out that morning, and she. So she went to the doctor, and the doctor was doing the checking and all of that. And at that time, they didn't have a lot of the medical advancements that they have now. So I was on top of Gregory, and they only had one heartbeat.
Whoa.
So the doctor said to my mother, just want to let you know you're doing fine and the babies are fine. She started to cry, and then I was born, and then 7 minutes later.
Well, I bring that up because the two of you together had this fashion male model career together and still do. So
he works all the time.
Your brother.
Gregory.
Now, what is your using history?
You know what? I think, my mother, when she was pregnant, her doctor said to her, Doris, have a couple drinks. Take the edge off. And in that time, women drank and they smoked. So there was no taboo associated with it. And unfortunately, because of this disease, our mother died at 58 years of age.
From alcoholism?
From alcoholism.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I really do believe, because every story is unique, every story is individual, I believe that I was born with the ism. My mother drank when she was pregnant with us.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something that was just a part of that was a part of my journey. You know, my mother's apple juice always tasted a little different. My mother would always run to the bathroom before every meal, and unbeknownst to me, it was add a little extra something to everything she was drinking.
And so did you start drinking really young?
No. Vivid memory. I have an older brother. Vincent turned 17. He had a birthday party. All the attention was on Vincent. And all the boys, 17, were having a couple fun drinks. They were young. So I went behind the bar, and I found a bottle of Bacardi. And I poured all this Bacardi into a glass, put a little Coke in it. I drank the whole thing. I started feeling this warm feeling all over, slowly move through me. And then I started getting drunk. And what happened in that moment is Vincent's party then became about me. Everybody got concerned. We called them. I mean, it was a thing.
Right.
And somehow, I'm sure deep rooted, I got the attention that I needed.
For sure.
And I was off. I was off, and I started drinking all the time. I have other layers to my addictions. It's not just solely alcoholism. And I think that I just needed everything and anything to escape and just not be me.
But you were also working.
Yes.
And you were seeing some level of success, correct, in the modeling world? So was that encouraged? Like, I would imagine people partied in that profession.
They did, but you know what? I pride myself. I never drank on the job, ever. And if it was something we were doing a segment on drinks, I would have a sip or a taste. Mm-hmm. I never did that. I was the after five drinker. I was the after six drinker. My drinking was, oh my gosh, my life is so horrible. I was working all the time. But my life is so horrible, I'm gonna complain about my father, complain about my brother, complain about the jobs that I had. So I drank every single day of the week. So
and alcohol made it better.
Yes, and I heard in the rooms, somebody said once, well, alcohol took me out of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I would build my days around the time I was gonna meet you for drinks and dinner. And it just became everything I knew. And then that opened up a door to something else, another addiction. And I'm very open and honest. about that. And it just one addiction led into another. And from alcohol, it then drugs. Mm-hmm. And I just was on the run. I was just on the run.
Were you feeling super depressed inside? I mean, what point did you give it up and how?
I am a product of my parents and the childhood they have. And the childhood their parents had, I think life is like a domino effect. You know, you throw a rock into a pond and you see the pond ripple, the water ripple out. I feel that when we are born, all those different lives ripple into us. Mm-hmm. So I feel I'm a product of both those histories. And I just drank to not feel anything. And then I had two bottoms where both times I thought I was going to die. And then by God's ultimate divine grace, you know, I'm here 14 and a half years.
Can you elaborate on the what happened with the bottoms?
You know what? I worked so hard. I bought a house. I put all my savings into this house. My dad was like, invest in property, invest in property, invest in property. I was on Extra as one of their lead correspondents. I was doing fashion all around the United States. I was the spokesperson for major brands. And I hated myself. I mean, it's just part of the disease. And when I think about it, I think I had everything. I think that I had everything. But I had nothing because I didn't have myself. So one bottom was with the alcohol became the cocaine addiction, and I just wanted to numb myself completely. So I remember this vividly from my first bottom. I was outside of my new house, this beautiful backyard, and I was drunk and I was high, and I was talking to my mom because I was done. I had cleaned my house. I knew that my life was coming to an end because I didn't want to live anymore. And I had this great conversation with my mom, and I was looking up at the full moon, and I said, okay, Mom, I'm coming home.
Oh, because she had already passed.
She had already passed. And I closed my eyes, and I took a deep breath, and I thought that was it. And God stepped in, because for some reason, I was in my at my funeral, and there were two women. I don't know who they were or what they were, but I think of them as angels. And one woman said to another woman, he died of cocaine. He died of cocaine. And some reason that just snapped me out of it. And I thought, oh my God, oh my God. I don't want to be known for that. Mm-hmm. Like, I love my life.
Was just like a kind of a drunken vision that you were having at the time?
Yeah, it was just, I call it a God shot.
Like a hallucination.
I call it a God shot. And I don't feel anyone that has struggled with alcohol or drugs or other addictions should keep it so close to themselves. Mm-hmm. Because what you learn is if you talk about it, other people will then realize, I'm not alone.
Right.
Why would I be ashamed of something that I've given over to God and I've got 14 and a half years?
Right.
I have nothing to be ashamed of.
And it's also not like you have 2 months. I think you definitely get more credibility on the matter if you wait to talk about it.
It also keeps me accountable. Right. I also know if I drink, because I will drink like a gentleman, I will then go to use and then I will die. If I drink, I will use, I will die. I don't want to die.
Right. So I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, so how did you do it? What was the first step you took after
I realized that I was powerless, and then I was on a better path, and then I had another bottom. Where just the same sort of hell took over. And somebody said in a room once, well, your bottom has a trap door. Mine had a trap door and it got worse.
Okay.
And I called Gregory and I called my best friend, Sherry, and I said, I've been lying to you both. I'm going to die unless I get help. So through the grace of God, and I will tell you this quickly, that was on a Sunday when I called them. On Monday, they were helping me. We were trying to get me sober. And I knew I had to go to rehab. I knew I had to get out. But for some reason, in my best thinking, I didn't know how to get there. I'm like, I could have just picked up the phone. I could have Googled it. But in my dark haze, I couldn't get out of it. So we were having dinner at the Grove. We were sitting at that little Italian restaurant, and we were talking about my struggles, how I was feeling. We were smoking, we were having drinks, and I kept drinking and drinking and drinking, and we were sitting next to these two girls. And I had said to Gregory, I just don't know how to get to rehab. I don't even, those were the words that came out of my mouth. We're talking to these two girls, the conversation expanded. We were just talking about life, and out of the blue, this man came and he sat next to them. And I said, what's your name? And he said what his name was. His name's Steve. What do you do? Steve said, oh, I don't talk about it. I'm like, Steve, what do you do? And he said, no, I just don't talk about it. And I kept drinking and drinking. Do you want to drink? And he said, no. And I finally said, dude. Now, I was drunk.
Right.
I said, dude, what do you do? And he said, I put people in rehab.
Oh, my gosh. Another God shot.
Courtney, what are the chances? What are the chances?
Oh, that gave me goosebumps.
I mean, what are the chances of me being at the Grove at that time in that moment? And I said to Gregory, hey, kiddo, I just don't know how to go to rehab. Think about what I said, because it could have been easier. But this man sat there and he said, I put people in rehab. So that Friday, I went to rehab.
And he helped you.
He helped me. He opened the door. I went to Promises in Malibu, and it changed my life.
Wow.
I have a life.
And what's your sobriety date?
July 29th.
Okay. And so when you came out of rehab, ever since then?
I've been sober since. And one day at a time. And one of my dearest friends, Bianca, said to me after my first year of sobriety, we met in one of the rooms, I said to her, oh my God, you love me. I love you. We're great. It's great. Fantastic. You know, if I ever leave the program, you'll still be in my life. And she said, but sweet boy, what would we talk about? And it's such a different dialogue. And whether it's alcohol, drugs, shopping, food, love, I really feel that everybody has something they're struggling through.
Of course.
The great thing that you do is you open up a door for people to know you're not alone.
Right.
Everybody is struggling. Everybody is reaching. Everybody is searching. Why search alone when you can create your tribe, your team, your group of people, and navigate life together?
So I'm curious, when you got out of rehab and you were still having to cover the Oscars and be at all of these events, I'm sure there was copious amounts of alcohol floating around. Was that a challenge for you?
Not once.
Okay.
Not once. Because I knew if I drink that, I will drink, I will use, I will die. And I also can't raise my hand to say I'm a newcomer again.
Right.
I went to rehab. There was 15 of us, 16 of us, 17 of us at every single meeting standing up because we were a group. Oh my God, this is so fun. Mm-hmm. When I see these people walk in that raise their hand again and they're broken because they've gone through it and they come back and they go through, I won't do that. I can't do that.
Yeah.
I just won't do that, and I don't want to play that card.
Do you have dreams where, you know, drug dreams? Because I feel like I have them every so often, maybe like once every 2 months. And I wake up and always feels so real, like I've been drinking.
Used, and then you have to go back and you're, yes.
And then you think, oh no, my time, I've lost my time.
And you can't get out of it.
I'm remembering now that I had a dream last night about it.
And what was the dream like?
It was we were going on a trip. And so previously, before my 10 years of sobriety, I had tried years before to get sober, and mm-hmm. I had gotten like 9 months. But at the 2 month mark, I drank in Paris and never told anyone. So it does count, people.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can't just drink in another country, it still counts as messing up your time. Yeah, so it had something to do with traveling.
I've had many of those dreams,
right.
And I can't get out of them in the dream. And then as I wake up, I really take a while to come back to sort of reality and realize I didn't lose everything and I've gained everything, because that's just another reminder with God saying, hey, you, go to more meetings. Hey, you, call your sponsor more. Hey, you, I'm just going to give you a little snapshot of what your world will be like if you go out.
Right.
And I don't want to go out. It's given me, you know, being sober has given me so many other opportunities to look at life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all about me. I get to be in situations, and now because of sobriety, I meet people where they're at. I don't ever tell somebody, you're not what I want. You know, we challenge other people because they're not what we need them to be in that moment. I hate this saying, but I love this saying, you be you, you do you. Mm-hmm. I have the tools to be me and accountable and make the steps that are appropriate. I don't do anything where I have to apologize anymore. I say nothing. And if I ever feel like I've been disrespectful, inappropriate, or mean-spirited, I will always go to somebody and say, Hey, by the way, I apologize if I was a little bit of an ass, if that landed poorly. And more times than not, they say, oh my gosh, you were fine.
Yeah, you're accountable for your
actions. But and then I feel better.
Right, of course.
And I shut up a lot. I don't say anything. I keep my mouth shut. And I surround myself with people that see me and love me.
And at what point did you come out about it? Because I know that you included it in your book, right?
Ten Commandments for a Perfect Wardrobe. Lawrence Arian's Ten Commandments for a Perfect Wardrobe. I felt that, and that was, I'm glad you brought that up. That was a big life-changing moment for me. In my book, I start the book with women looking in the mirror and exposing themselves, taking off all their clothes. Now, whether they needed a glass of wine or a shot of vodka or some sort of apple juice or something to shoot, because a lot of people need that moment to be like, take a deep breath, do what you need to do, because there's so many normies out there that can have a glass of wine and not let it bother them. Do what you need to do and look in the mirror and see you, all of you, naked. And I thought halfway through the book, wait, I'm asking you to expose yourself. I should expose myself. And that was very freeing. And Dr. Phil, one of my dear producer friends there, Stephanie Grenadier, said, let's celebrate your book, but I'd like you to open up about your sobriety. And that was year eight or nine. And I call it camp. I went to camp, and it's God camp, teaching me how to be sober and live a life that is happy, joyous, and free one day at a time.
I'm going to steal that. I want to start using that.
Well, just, you know what? I have nothing to be ashamed of. And I don't know. And because of me talking about my sobriety, other people are coming to me and saying, I know you're sober. Can we talk? What does that look like? We're in a really crazy time, Courtney, as you know, with what we see in the news, with what we see on television, with what we're reading. Our world is screaming for help and for healing. So if we can say to the rest of the world, one person at a time, like I put my sobriety on social media.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
I'm so proud of it. And if another person can follow me and say, because of you, I'm thinking of my life differently, why wouldn't you?
Tell me, in the 14 and a half years, what was the most challenging instance for you where you may have, like, you recognize, like, this is a time I would have wanted to drink and I need to find some way to escape these feelings?
I've never, ever wanted to escape my feelings, which is something I find fascinating because I can call my sponsor, I can call my friends. I'm in my feelings more than ever, but I would say probably the most painful time, because I felt it all, was the passing of my father. Okay. When my mother was passing 20 years ago, I was drunk. I wasn't there. And with my father, it's so profound to be in those moments and feel them. My father gave me my six-year cake. Oh. My father gave me my cake for my first year of sobriety, and he said, I don't understand it, but I want to learn.
Oh, that's so smart.
One of the last conversations my dad and I had that was a little heated, because sometimes you can get into those conversations. He said, hey, look, I'm going to stay on my side of the street. Okay, well, that's what I was taught, which I then taught him. So it's amazing how it's sort of like the domino effect with what we learn we get to pass on. But I say the passing of my father was the most painful and the most divine, because I was in it. And he looked at me and he said, I'm so proud of you. Mm-hmm. Said, I'm so proud
and you,
of you
talking about that, because to me, that's a big fear of mine. Like, how am I going to get through that when that day comes for me? But by hearing other sober people talk about how they got through it, it gives, you know, me hope. And I'm sure someone out there watching this hope too.
We have a great place here in West Hollywood called the Log Cabin. Mm-hmm. It is a home of sobriety.
Which is being threatened to being ripped
down.
It is,
now. But a lot of voices are coming out to say, please keep this space. It's like, I want to say it's like a sober sanctuary. It's a place where people go to heal. And one of my favorite people in the rooms, her name's Michonne, and she was leading the meeting that Sunday morning. And she said, just candidly and in simple words, I buried my parents. They both died close to each other, and I survived. And I was like, what? She survived. So because of those words, I'm like, wait, if you can survive the passing of your parents sober, both of them, I can survive my father.
Right.
And it hurts. But I never once wanted to die.
I want to ask you too, because as people are coming out about being sober, what are your thoughts on talking about AA? Obviously, you've mentioned it here, but like, it's taboo, and I hate that. I hate that it's supposed to be anonymous.
I really respect the anonymity of all of it, and I love the foundation that we were built on.
Right.
I always use a 12-step program in my book. I never said those words. I'm very respectful of that.
Right.
I feel that there are those pieces of our foundation that are put in place for a reason. So I feel that you can still talk about your sobriety, you can still talk about alcohol, drugs, gambling, food, with still being
like in a general
respectful way to what was handed off to you.
Right.
Because then when somebody else struggles and they fall, a lot of people then want to attach that to other labels. And to me, why would you do that? Because nobody wants to see, a lot of people don't want to see other people succeed.
Yes.
They
yes.
try to knock people, oh, no, 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 I'm going to knock you down, I'm going to knock you down. That's not what life is. Life is to extend a hand and lift people up.
Right.
We are supposed to extend the hand. And everybody is so angry now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think things have to be blown up to heal. So everything's been blown up. Now let's just heal, and if I can help one person heal,
right.
you know?
Well, you are extending your hand, as am I. We are trying to help people heal. In closing, I always ask, you know, number one tip to someone who's out there struggling right now.
Don't be afraid. Reach out. Talk to somebody. Tell someone I'm struggling. Reach out to me on Instagram.
Yeah, where can people find you?
Lauren Zarian. Reach out to me. Reach out to you and say, hey, I heard you. I saw you. I need you. Because that is what we do, and that is what we do in these programs. We extend a hand to say you're not alone, and you never have to struggle again. Happy, joyous, free.
Well said. I appreciate you, Lawrence Zarian,
for you.
Keeping it real with me. Maybe we can host a show together one day on this.
You know
this,
what?
Because we're
Let's
trying to bring the message that sobriety rocks, and it can happen. All right, see you next time.